Atari ST Show number 2. This time, we take a look at Atari corporate history from August 1989 using ST Format Magazine issue 1. We explore the cover disc, the corporate news, and the game reviews. All that and more. One note, after moving to Linux away from Windows 11, I'm still getting up to speed with my Shotcut and Tenacity video editing and audio mastering, so there's a couple quality wrinkles in this one. I apologize. I'll be hopefully fixing them all in future episodes. Welcome to Atari ST Show number 2. What are we doing today, Steve?
We're going to look at, I think, a magazine?
Yeah, we're going to look at the cover disc for ST Format Cover Disc 01. So number 1 from August of 1989.
Right, so we're going to watch your video, and then we're going to talk about it. So why don't we do the video now?
We begin our Tramiel era Atari history exploration in this episode by digging into the world of Atari news and the cover disc for August of 1989, the premier issue number 1 of ST Format Magazine. This era of Atari history post-Warner has not been covered in detail in too many places. So to right that wrong in our little way, we're going to the source, ST Format Magazine, the most successful and comprehensive magazine to cover the world of the Atari ST and corporate Atari from 1989 onward. We're not going to read the magazine page by page, though, as the actual PDFs are available online for you to take a look at if we spark your interest. But we're going to get an idea of the state of Atari Corp by summarizing the always brilliant ST Format news section, quickly taking a look at the game reviews, and then digging a little bit deeper into a full dive of the contents of the cover disc. Remember, like the Video Game Newsroom Time Machine podcast, we're using the cover dates of the magazines as a reference point. Obviously, we know that cover dates and lead time greatly affect the timeliness of the news. To get started, let's take a brief look at the corporate news and game reviews before diving in to the cover disc. On page 7, we get the news. And by the way, ST Format had the most comprehensive news of any magazine of the era on the ST machines and Atari Corp. In the Richard Monteiro Atari News section, we find these tidbits to be very interesting. Atari Corp had put more money into development this year than any year before, but Atari seems to have been spreading this money very thin. Here's some examples. The Stacy laptop was supposed to be ready by now, but Atari pulled it back for, quote-unquote, cosmetic tweaks, and because other projects needed attention. It seems to now be on a back burner. Also, Richard calls Atari a 90-day company, meaning that projects bearing completion are given only 90 days to get their act together and hit the streets, with limited budget and manpower. If they don't get launched, they go on a back burner. Just to prove this point, the rest of the stories in this section seem to be telling of the multi-personality Atari and its constant shifts in priorities. Next up, there's an ST replacement to challenge the Archimedes. It's a story about Atari working on a sub-$1,000 RISC reduced instruction set machine to take on the mighty Archimedes. Note, the Archimedes is the grandfather of the RetroPie and all other RISC machines in use today. There is a news story about the STE coming out for Christmas as an Amiga beater. The described machine was the one most of us wanted. A 256-color screen, 4-channel digital sound, hardware scrolling, etc. Only the hardware scrolling was actually included. Along with it came the blitter from the Mega STE and an updated color palette. But no more colors on the screen, etc. The STE has proven over the years to be a pretty powerful machine, but nothing like we expected. It's released in limited feature form from the overworked, understaffed Atari is what most likely killed the platform for good. Another interesting section, also from Richard, is about Atari history. He says in this section that about 1 million STs have been sold worldwide. That includes about 400 to 600,000 mostly business machines with monochrome monitors in Germany, about 320,000 game machines split between UK and France, but only about 15,000 in the USA, which seems really low because Atari sold 50,000 USA units in its first year. So there must be some odd accounting in one of those two stories that I read. Page 23 is the actual American news section. Atari seemed to have made a splash at the April Chicago Comdex. Announced was the handheld PC portfolio, the Stacy laptop, the PC4 IBM compatible, and the Megafile 44 removable hard disk. Next up, there's a news story about Atari-specific vendors needing to find new machines for their wares because there weren't enough ST machines to sell them on. We personally saw many developers start to abandon the Atari ST in the USA at this point. Who owns Atari Corp? It's also in this section. Jack Tramiel owns 43%, or about 25 million shares. His family and sons own another 2.85 million shares, so about 4%. And Warner Communications owns 24.6%. Okay, that's enough of the news. We're going to take a quick look at the games reviewed every time we look at a magazine or cover disc. So let's look at those now. Very quickly, Phobia, a horizontal scrolling shooter by Imageworks and Mirsoft, got a 65%. Cult, a graphic adventure from Exos, received 73%. Blood Witch, also by Mirsoft, and the demo on the disc we'll take a look at in a bit, received an ST format gold and 95%. King of Chicago, again by Mirsoft, but this time a CinemaWare game, is another hybrid sort of adventure game set in 1930 Chicago. It received 61%. License to Kill, an action game licensed by Domark for the Bond film series, received 76%. Garfield, A Winter's Tale by Softtek, received a surprisingly good 70% rating. Let Sleeping Gods Lie, an Entertainment International release, is a 3D adventure slash RPG combo that received 72%. Azeroth, a decent early computer entry into the genre that would later be coined as Metroidvania, received 73%. Waterloo, another Mirsoft release, this time a war game, got a surprisingly good 91% review. Sky Fox 2, a surprising EA release for the ST, as they said they would never release games for the ST, and a sort of first-person fly-in shooter, received a paltry 58%. Red Lightning, an SSI war game that was actually for the PC, seems to have received an ST release here, with a 64%. Navy Moves, a sort of run-and-gun game mixed with other mini-games, again from EA, received 69%. Okay, that's it for the games. Now, let's dive into the disc. First up is Bloodwick. The demo requires copying files to another disc in the root so it can be booted. The blurb from the magazine. Programmed by Mirsoft. Machine, all color STs. Files, boot.prg and the game code. Mirsoft's latest addition to their range of role-playing games is Bloodwick. Fans of Dungeon Master will be familiar with this style of game, but Bloodwick has the added advantage that two people can take part. I emulated joystick 1 or 0 with the keyboard to get the demo started and proceeded to give it a test using player 2 with my real joystick. The controls are pretty intuitive, with movement and turning using the joystick and buttons on the interface. You're inside Castle Bloodwick, where you must find and fight a once-dominant demon. At your disposal, you have magic spells and your fighting abilities. It's a pretty standard RPG adventure hack and slash that again received a 95%. Taking a look at Moby Games, this was the high ranking. Zero Magazine gave it a review in the 80s, and Joker Verlag, holding up the rear, gave it a 61%, saying everything was good but average. Next up is Stingray by French demo legend Skunk White Rabbit, and Poltergeist. This is a demo using assets from the Colt TV series and playing a sampled song. Unfortunately, I got a copyright infringement, not a strike, but a, hey, you can't do that, when I tried to play the rest of this. So you're going to have to boot up the disc yourself if you want to take a listen to the demo. Next up is the second game on the disc, or the only other game. It's Pentominoes, a 1988 game by Frank Driver and Jeff Willis. It's the only other game on the disc, and it's a fun grid-based game where you have to fit all the shapes in to win. I did not win. GFA Basic 2 was also included. And here I test a tiny program. Also, there are a few demo programs from the magazine on the disc, which is one of my favorite parts of exploring these cover discs. The disc also contains a full GFA Basic 2 manual. I have a feeling this is where we got our GFA Basic 2 way back then. The demo programs, especially the sprite editor, are very familiar, so I'm pretty sure we had this disc. There are three interesting utilities to round out the disc. Postmort can be used to run after an ST crash to query the parts of memory that stay resonant on reset and find out what might have caused the bombs. RAMDisk is from a set of utilities that can be used to add a new drive to the desktop, making use of the extra RAM in your 1040 or Mega computers. Finally, there's a disk formatter that I think is included to help people make blank disks for use with the cover disk. All in all, it's a nice debut for Atari ST Format Magazine, especially with GFA Basic 2 and Bloodwick being the highlights. Okay, let's move on to homebrew. Recently, there was an absolutely fantastic Pac-Man clone called Puckman that's been ported to the STE. Saberman Retro had a great video about it. There's also an itch.io page that I translated from French to English. Both the hard disk and floppy disk versions are available. Here I am trying to play Pac-Man. While I play, let's read some information from the itch.io page. The arcade classic arrived to the Atari STE as Puckman, the Japanese version of Pac-Man. Eat all the pellets and avoid the ghosts. That's the goal of the game, and of course, score points. Eat power pellets to get rid of the ghosts and go as far as you can go to discover the breaks between levels. If you reach 10,000 points, you'll get an extra life. Controls. The C key allows you to insert quarters. Keys 1 and 2 allow you to choose the number of players. Press the escape key to exit the game and return back to Gem. Joystick 1 is used by both players. Credits. Programmer. Laurent Gilliard. Pseudonym. J.C. Deucey. Or Deuce. Languages. Assembler and C. Tools. VBCC and VASM. Framework. The STX Engine version 2.0. Okay, one other homebrew. There's a great homebrew in the works by Jonathan Thomas, he of Lotus STE fame. This is an STE crazy taxi clone with a thrust-like interface with parallax scrolling. So far, it looks fantastic.
Okay, first of all, I'm positive we got this disc for sure. One thing I want to say is... So in that, in one of the reviews was for Colt.
Yeah,
Colt. Colt. So I wish I had read that review before I bought Colt. I think I spent like $35 on Colt at the Computer Games Plus when to buy it. And Colt is a crazy game that I'd love to do its own video about, where it's an adventure game, but if you follow the rules of the game precisely, you lose every time. And the point of the game is you to figure out that you're not supposed to follow the instructions. You're supposed to do something else. And when you do that, it's very interesting. I would also give it a 63% because it's frustrating, but or whatever it was. But it's I did like it. The other one to talk about is Bloodwick, which is the one ST game that still exists that I'd love to go back and replay because I played it some when it came out. I didn't like that there were two players.
Yeah,
only had
the
one
two
player.
Players.
I would have loved if it was just one player. But, I mean, it's kind of amazing that it had two players. But I never really played it back then, although it is kind of a fun take on Dungeon Master, and I would love to go back and
play. You really need two people sitting there playing together that would make
But it does look like it is. It is cool. So that was good. The as far as your video went, I like that. I like Atari ST Show. I think this is pretty good. What do you think you're going to do next?
Well, so first of all, the GFA basic thing on there is the type of thing I'm searching for on these discs, because before, you know, there's a story in here, and we want to do just the Atari news. We're not reading the entire magazine. I don't care about the features. I don't care about the other software that came out, really. I care about the games because it's just fun. But what I want to get is that Atari news. So I'm going to make sure. So we get, like, what was going on at Atari. And ST Format seemed to cover that, like, news at Atari better than anyone else. Like, who owns pieces of Atari?
That was interesting. Yeah. Like, the percentages that Warner still owned a lot.
Yeah, Warner still owned a lot.
What I found interesting was the numbers that they thought of STs that sold in the USA. Like, it had to be more than 15,000.
Well, that sold 50,000 in the first year.
Yeah.
They sold out. So it's not correct.
My guess is 150,000 at least.
Yeah.
You know, like, maybe a little bit more than that. I mean, there wasn't a huge amount of ST owners, but even at high school, there were at least three or four.
No, there was enough ST owners that there was more than 15,000.
And there were some Amiga. Yeah.
By 1989, there were 15,000 in 1987.
But what I really liked about that was the GFA Basics too. And I'm wondering, I was thinking about this, something you mentioned last year, be fun to have at the end of the year, a public domain disc of things that we've made.
Yeah.
I know that Adventure Creator on the 8-bit was one you were going to do, and I was thinking about doing a pinball construction set. But now when I look at this, I'm like, What if we made GFA Basic games, and for the point of by December to have our own
GFA
public domain disc of stuff to download?
Just now, the interesting thing about that is that I've been searching for tools for the ST, not the STE. I've been searching for STE tools forever to make STE targeted games.
I know,
and they're starting to arrive. Like, people are making them, and I can see them. But now, since people are making STE stuff, I'm seeing all these tools that came out that look like they weren't really used for making ST games, like the GI sound tool. Like, what can that do? And the outputs code that works in GFA Basic.
Oh, wow.
I was like, well, how do you do that? So I think there's some interesting things to be done that targets just a plain 520 or 1040
ST. I'd like to do that. I mean, you focus on like an ST
and STOS and stuff like that.
But I'm just talking, like, what if we can focus on GFA? It doesn't matter. We focus on how much space on a single set it is.
About 800K if you format it.
Single-sided?
No, single-sided. A 360. We don't want to do that. We want to do a double-sided 800K disc.
So we create a disc image. I mean, you can also put it on a disc, but I'd love to have one.
We're just going
to
have someone download a disc. We'll have them for ourselves.
Yeah.
Disc image. Yeah, that's something I really want to do. I run it, not just GFA Basic, but STOS, and I kept on doing all these things where I really want to target the STE, and I'm thinking, well, let's make stuff for every ST.
That's right.
Let's work on all the STs.
That sounds like fun. Okay, well, I like ST Show. We should keep doing this.
We will keep doing the ST Show. One other thing, the homebrew. The Puckman is absolutely amazing.
It's crazy, yeah.
And there was a Defender that came out also earlier in the year. We covered that on the Atari Now show. But there's... And then Jonathan Thomas's scrolling sort of crazy taxi style. It's not just taxi, like space taxi style game.
That was neat.
Looks amazing too. He said the way he's got it going on with two full screens scrolling, one with sprites and one with a parallax background. He's only got it running at about 25 frames a second right now, so he's working on optimizing it. But it's just, that's a lot to move on an ST or SDE, that screen. Those 64K of screen.
That's cool.
On one, and you also have the whole screen, so maybe it's even more, like a couple hundred K of screen to move with these non-chunky graphics, or the planar graphics. It's really hard to do. Okay, well, that's it for Atari ST Show number 2. Atari ST Show number 3. Coming up soon.
Awesome. That was fun.
Hey, into the vertical blank.
We were children of the Silicon Revolution, an X generation conscripted to fight the console and home computer wars. a product of an analog 70s childhood, we came of digital age in the 80s, believing we could affect the world 8 bits at a time. Armed with joysticks, full-stroke keyboards, Jolt Cola, and MTV haircuts, we proceeded into the vertical blank. There, we stayed up late at night, devising incantations from D&D rulebooks and beginner's all-purpose symbolic instruction code. Video games were the match, and programming was the fuse, as the infinite possibilities of the digital world exploded into the internet age to come. We are Generation Atari.
Into the vertical blank.